Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast here on the UBS Market Moves Podcast channel. Joining me for the conversation today, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor from Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, it's great to be back on the mic with you today. I know we took a bit of a late summer pause, though plenty to catch our listeners up on, and a lot ahead of us as we look toward September and October, and of course into Election Day in early November. So glad that we're resuming these weekly conversations.
Well, thank you for having me back, Dan. Yeah, D.C. Gets a little quiet during August with lawmakers out of town, but you can already feel the shift coming of anticipation of them getting back to work.
With that, Shane, as the late summer congressional recess has largely ended, lawmakers have made their return to Washington, D.C., what legislative priorities will lawmakers focus on as Congress reconvenes?
Yeah, they have a hefty agenda. I think the primary focus will be funding government operations. As we probably talked about before, the fiscal year ends at the end of September. So if Congress does not take appropriate action, there will be government shutdown on October 1st. Now, the Senate has passed a bipartisan bill to fund the federal government until for a few months, and now it's the House's turn to take that up. So we would expect the House to take that up next week. It has bipartisan support, but it remains to be seen if it has sufficient support to actually pass. So that will be the focus of next week for the House. After that, both the House and Senate have some other things that expire at the end of September, like the Highway Reauthorization Bill, the Farm Bill, and a few other smaller things. So there'll be likely be some kind of punt on those issues. I don't foresee Congress getting its act together quickly and passing long-term reauthorizations of those programs. So there'll probably be a couple month punt on those issues. From there, you know, there's a big kind of wish list, if you will, like crypto market structure, FISA, which is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. There's been an expired piece of that law. So, you know, there's some other things on the docket, but I think the main show will be, you know, government funding and then a few other items that, you know, maybe are close to ready to being done or also expire at the end of September.
And in parallel, Shane, to a substantial legislative agenda, the U.S. midterm elections top of mind for lawmakers as well. At this point, just a little over 2 months away with much at stake for both parties. So as we're speaking today here in late August, what is polling pointing to with respect to the composition of Congress comes January 2027?
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think we're 67 days away from the election, as you and I talked here on Friday, the 28th of August. And, you know, I think Democrats are in a good position to win the House. The Senate remains a little bit more of a coin flip at this moment. You know, I think it's also important to take a moment and think about history where in 2018, in President Trump's first term, he had full Republican control. And in the 2018 midterms, he lost control of the House. You know, Republicans were soundly defeated in the House and Democrats took over. However, you know, because the Senate is not all up for reelection every 2 years, it's only about one third that's up for election. It really depends on where, you know, the math is. And in 2018, Republicans actually had a net gain of two seats. Now, does that mean Republicans will have a net gain this time, even as Democrats were likely to take over the House? No, but it just shows you that you have to think a little bit deeper about the Senate. You know, I think it's a toss-up in the Senate. You know, Republicans probably are going to lose a seat or two, like North Carolina, but they also have good pickup opportunities in Michigan, and they're getting excited about their chances in New Hampshire. Some recent polling has showed that Republicans will be competitive in New Hampshire. And that's some of the chessboard where you know, everyone's moving pieces. Republicans were very excited that Democrats in Florida did not have their preferred candidate win. They had the more progressive candidate, and that should help Senator Ashley Moody, Republican of Florida, win. And that means Republicans will spend less resources that they had anticipated in Florida and shift those to states where they may have a chance. However, you know, I think Democrats have a bit of momentum behind them right now when you look at, you know, polling on things like the economy, of geopolitical affairs. And so I think there's some momentum for Democrats, and polling is largely reflecting that. So it's going to be an interesting, you know, 2+ months until Election Day.
Yep, and we will, of course, keep our listeners informed on what the polls are pointing to as we continue to inch closer and closer to Election Day. Stepping outside of Congress for a few moments, we did recently see that CIA Director John Ratcliffe traveled to Moscow, Russia for a meeting with his intelligence counterparts. There was much secrecy surrounding this meeting. What do we know about its purpose and outcome?
Yeah, this is really fascinating to me, and I think this is one of the most important stories of this week, you know, for us to pay attention to. But you're right, there's a lot of mystery behind it. We're starting to hear some leaks about the content, and, you know, I think it was, while these meetings between intelligence heads actually happen routinely, it is a little bit less routine that the CIA director goes to Moscow to meet with a counterpart there. The last time, we know that happened was CIA Director Burns under President Biden going to warn Russia that, you know, intelligence showed they were about to attack Ukraine, and that was not a wise decision. So this, knowing that the historical context there, has made a number of people in D.C., quite nervous about CIA Director Ratcliffe's visit earlier this week. It appears that the conversation, you know, had a couple pieces to it. One, to serve as a warning to the Russians that, you know, NATO still remains intact, and that, you know, attacking one of Russia's neighbors that is in NATO would trigger Article 5, which is where other NATO members would stand up for that NATO member that is attacked. So a solemn, stern warning to Russia. Additionally, I think, you know, there have been some reports that, you know, Russia has been helping Iran. And I think some of it was a warning to Russia that, you know, they may want to back off that support for Iran. You know, what I also find interesting is that the CIA is a little bit different in the sense of they have this back channel that has been a little bit stronger than, you know, the negotiating table that we've seen for the Ukraine-Russia war. Notably, I think maybe we talked about it a few weeks ago, was Russia releasing a U.S. prisoner. So, you know, those are the small nuggets that are meaningful and worthy of paying attention to. And so that has showed that the CIA has a little bit, has earned a little more respect from their Russian counterparts. So it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out. But I definitely think it is noteworthy and a storyline that we should pay attention to.
Yeah, quite fascinating indeed, and something we'll continue to monitor. With that, Shane, thank you for dropping by today. It was great catching up with you, and do look forward to continuing our conversations in the weeks and months ahead.
Great. Well, thank you. It's always good to be with you, Dan. Look forward to catching up with you soon. Take care.
Thank you, Shane. Again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor from Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. As always, I want to point out to you, our listeners and clients of UBS, you may now locate the latest edition of the Washington Weekly publication series is available for you up on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for tuning in.
Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.